Time to get our local view, though recently he's been in Vegas, the other Sin City, Spokane. He'll be headed for the original Magic Kingdom as Oregon continues this run. Find his work in the Register Guard. Become a Twitter follower. Use the handle at AustinMeekRG. We welcome in Austin Meek. Austin, how's it going?
Hey, Steve, I'm good. Got back in town last night, went home, did some laundry, and I'm back at the airport now on my way to Anaheim.
So oh.
You see my family, let them know I'm still alive.
The check-in. I like that. So let me guess this straight. Based on what I saw on Twitter, a photograph, you guys drove from here to Spokane and back?
We did, yeah. And, you know, I was able to put my immense mechanical abilities to the test on the way home when the car would not start. But, you know, me being the handyman that I am, I was able to get under the hood and monkey around a little bit and get us going again.
So I'm just curious, because being an East Coaster, you know, for me, if it's more than 2 hours, you get on a plane. So I would have a stroke. What kind of trip is that? And as far as is there a whole lot of nothing there?
It's about 8-9 hours, yeah. Ugh. And, you know, I've made that drive a few times. My in-laws live up that way, so I'm familiar with it. But, yeah, the car broke down in Umatilla, Oregon. My first time in Umatilla, and I was looking at spending a lot more time there than I had ever desired. But fortunately, it was not a long pit stop.
All right, so this event... you've covered it more than a few times, followed it closely, and regardless of how much you were able to catch of it, Cincinnati and St. Joseph's on Friday, the way it ended, Octavius Ellis dunks the ball, it's tied, but wait a minute, upon further review, they pull it down. Just reaction-wise, just for plain wild, have you ever seen anything like that?
You know, I'd have to go back through my memory bank, but nothing comes to mind. That was pretty wild. I actually wasn't in the arena when it happened. I was watching in the press room. They've got it up on a big projection screen, and there's like a lag time, like a five-second delay on the screen compared to what happens in the arena. So I heard two huge cheers right in succession, so I figure, okay, something crazy must have happened here. And then, you know, 5 seconds later, it comes up on the screen, the shot by St. Joe's to take the lead, and then the dunk at the end by Cincinnati that they ultimately waved off. So, yeah, we've had a lot of crazy finishes. You know, I'm not even sure that was the craziest finish of the first weekend of the tournament, but it was still pretty crazy.
Now, obviously, the Pac-12 got put through the grinder. There's one team standing. Cal was with you guys in Spokane. Obviously, a pending scandal looming. No Ty Wallace. With all that's happened, when did you guys find out that Wallace wouldn't be playing? And was it just that maybe Cal ill-suited to overcome all of this, or they just have an off game?
Yeah, you know, we saw that news, I guess, with everybody else, you know, when it started coming out on Twitter. Man, that was just a whole pile up of things that happened to Cal last week that just totally torpedoed a season that had a lot of promise for them. You know, there were a lot of people thinking that was a Sweet 16 caliber team with the talent they had, and it just completely all came unraveled. And that's part of a broader theme for the Pac-12. You know, when Oregon won that game against St. Joe's, the happiest guy in the building outside of the Oregon people had to be Larry Scott, because if all of his teams had gone down in the first weekend, that would have been a really bad look to the Pac-12.
Let's get to Oregon. Friday night against Holy Cross, really a complete and total mismatch as the one seeds remain unbeaten for eternity. Well, at least since the tournament expanded in 85 in that first round. In a year like this, some people maybe wondered, would that change? But I saw what you wrote. Is it logical to think that the Ducks maybe benefited from some of those early upsets and kind of made them focus and take nothing for granted?
Yeah, they were pretty locked in. They saw the outcome of that Michigan State game. You know, that's been the shocker of the tournament so far. I mean, there's upsets every year, crazy upsets. You sort of expect that, but nobody expected Middle Tennessee over Michigan State. And I think some of the Oregon players saw that. They were watching that game. They were sitting around all day watching games. And that was just kind of one last reminder for them that, hey, anything can happen in this tournament. Now, that being said, Holy Cross had zero chance in that game. That was probably the worst team in the NCAA tournament by a pretty wide margin. You know, give them some credit. They went on a nice run in their conference tournament, but they were not a very good team for most of the year, and they definitely were not a very good team in that game.
We're talking with Austin Meeker, the Register guard. Now, you got a chance to talk with one of my Philly guys, Phil Martelli, the coach of St. Joe's, and I guess some of what he said maybe rustled a feather or two. I'm kind of curious, what exactly did he say about Oregon, the Pac-12, and you were there. Was there really what you would call a disrespectful tone, or was maybe a little bit of oversensitivity involved?
Well, these comments definitely became a big deal and really got blown up, which was interesting because, you know, I was sitting there at the time, and it didn't really register for me that this was going to be a big deal. But, you know, I was there at Phil Martelli's press conference and just asked him, you know, what do people in Philadelphia and on the East Coast know about Oregon basketball? Because Oregon's not a traditional power. They play a lot of their games late at night, and it's hard to get them on TV. So I was curious. And you know, his answer, I thought, was a great answer because it was an honest answer. But, you know, he was pretty candid about the fact if you asked his players who won the Pac-12, some of them probably would guess Arizona just because they're not real tuned in to what's going on out west. And, I mean, look, if you ask Oregon players who won the A-10 this year, I guarantee you most of them wouldn't know the answer either. But it sort of feeds into this idea of East Coast bias and the fact that, you know, maybe Oregon has not gotten the national recognition it deserves for this season. I mean, look, they're a one seed. People who pay attention know that they're really good, but if that's what it takes to get the engine going, then more power to them, I guess.
I'm going to start a movement here because if they don't know who won the Patriot League, America East, and the A-10, that's clearly West Coast bias. So we'll see how that plays
exactly.
out. Well, let's get to back to the disaster of the performance of this conference. Arizona didn't lose. They got spanked. And if you think about the game against Oregon in the conference tournament, they really got completely outplayed. Is it possible we got what I call uniform hypnotized? And because they're Arizona, maybe even all season long, there was just a sense of giving them credit for being better than they were all year, and they just weren't?
I think I definitely fell into that trap. You know, early in the Pac-12 season, somebody asked me, who do you think wins the Pac-12 this year? And I said, well, you know, I still think Arizona is the best team, and maybe the gap is smaller than it's been, but I still like Arizona. I think a lot of people felt that way. But as the season wore on, you just saw that Arizona was not what Arizona has been. Maybe they get back to that next year. You know, they had an injury to a guy who was going to be one of their key players, and they've got some recruits coming in, so they could easily get back to that next year. But this year, at least, Arizona was not Arizona, and that's a big part of why the Pac-12 has been pretty underwhelming in this tournament. And, you know, from Oregon's perspective, I think you got to wonder, with Utah proving not to be a very good team in this tournament and Arizona going down the way they did, has Oregon really been tested, you know, against the caliber of teams that now they're going to see moving forward? Duke, for all we know, Duke may be the best team Oregon's played all season. And so, you know, it's hard to predict how that's going to turn out.
Yeah, actually, I wanted to tie that in because if you look at Oregon's performance against St. Joe's, it was like a tale of multiple games within the game, whether you incorporate Oregon in control, the 23-6 run by the Hawks, the clutch threes from Brooks and Dorsey, the turnover. But if you look at the performance of the Ducks in that game, would you say less than desired and against maybe the likes of this Duke team, that might be fatal if they repeat that?
Sure. I mean, if Oregon shoots it like that against Duke, they're not going to win the game. I think that's pretty obvious. The line from the Oregon guys after the game was, you know, every season you're going to have, you know, maybe 8 or 10 games where you just can't shoot it. For whatever reason, the ball doesn't go in the basket. And in those games, you got to find a way to be able to win ugly. And so I think they felt good that they figured out how to win that game on a night when they weren't shooting it well. And you know, that those games happen in the turn. You know, I remember covering Kansas when they won it all, playing Steph Curry. They had a game just like that. It was like 59-55, just a totally ugly game. You know, if you're going to make a deep run, you got to win one of those games. So, you know, there's no such thing as style points in the NCAA tournament. You don't nitpick a win. You're happy to move on. But also, I think Oregon's got to realize they have to play better than that against Duke if they want to win.
Survive in advance. I get around here, you get the win the day. But when you think about just before tip-off Sunday night, here you had Oregon, the last conference team standing. All the other one seeds had advanced. It was the last game of the weekend, all eyes on. You think it was safe to say, whether the guys admit it or not, man, they had a lot of pressure on them beyond the obvious losing the season's over.
Yeah, I mean, games like that can be the hardest games to play. You know, it's a game that you should win. I mean, if you lose in the second round, it's not like losing in the Elite Eight or even losing in the Sweet 16. Like, you lose in the second round, that's a huge disappointment. And the story is you choked, right?
Yeah.
That's what everybody would have said. If Oregon loses in the second round, oh, they choked. If Oregon loses to Duke, I don't think people are going to say they choked. I think people are going to say, you know, they didn't go as far as they could have. They ran into a traditional power, a really good team, and they lost. But there's a lot of pressure in those second-round games because you're playing a good opponent. You're playing a team that has won a game already in the tournament and obviously belongs there. But it's also an opponent you're supposed to beat when you're a number one seed. So, yeah, there was a lot of pressure on Oregon. And, you know, to me, that was the most impressive thing is they got down 58-51. That's where, when you're the number one seed with 5 minutes left, the pressure really ratchets up. You know, if you're going to get tight and choke, that's where it happens. You know, and instead they went the other way. They really locked in and played great that last 5 minutes and were able to pull it out. So that, to me, that was one of the really impressive parts.
All right, final thought. A couple of years back, folks around here had "We Want Bama" shirts made in football. You know, in certain sports, you know, there's nothing quite like beating the Yankees in baseball. And while the objective is obvious, but from a magnitude angle, and I guess for you personally, I mean, you're covering Oregon. They're playing Duke in the Sweet 16. As simple as it sounds, I mean, this kind of rates high on the awesome scale, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. It's going to be a great game. I'm really looking forward to it. I mean, I don't know that there's another team in the country that you would want to play in a game like this if you're Oregon. You know, it is. Duke is the equivalent of Alabama in football and the Yankees in baseball. It's that team that, you know, aside from their fans, everybody else can't stand them.
Right.
Grayson Allen is like the new villain in college basketball. So, yeah, there's so many storylines, and, you know, Oregon's going to be fired up, and Coach K, and, you know, everything you could want in a Sweet 16 game is going to be there.
Yeah, I'm telling you, you're headed into a situation where you're going to see some good ball. All right, hey, always appreciate you getting us started. I'm really glad you get to take a plane down to Southern California. So travel safe, and we'll catch up with you next week, Austin.
Yeah, as great a mechanic as I am, I don't think I'd want to push my luck again, so it's good that I'll be on the plane.
Yeah, and I'll speak on behalf of the passengers. I don't think I want to see you under that hood either. All right, take it easy, Austin.